Some other things that could take place are inclusive pride events, which are being activated now in France, Spain, and Australia, where they celebrate the successes and highlights the struggles of fellow marginalized cultures. Ability, status of women, HIV positive individuals and such. They're all included as a pride of who you are, regardless where you come from. And I think this may be something that we, as time, this is going to become a common trend, because within the queer literature coming out, there's always an actual element of race, gender, ability included into the whole package. I haven't really quite found anything that strictly looks at only gay coming out of queer work. It's all part of it.
But this would mark surely a big change in gay politics.
It would.
Gay activism.
It would,
because
yeah.
As we see gay pride, and it would appear to be very much confronting the gay as a single issue. It has something to do with the whole debate about single interest politics.
Yeah.
In North America, which I would argue is spreading now to Europe, where people don't think inclusively, they think very much of their particular group. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if this is still true, but my feeling is that gays, more than lesbians, gay men more than gay women or lesbians, have emphasized their difference. Mm-hmm. So that I would suppose inclusive pride events would.
What is their difference to everything else? Their commonality amongst themselves.
Yes.
Rather than their difference.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah. This would be, to me, it sounds like what you're advocating is a big change.
It would be a very big change. I'm also aware that they're coming from countries that are quite advanced in a sense, but definitely it would mark a big change in gay politics, and I don't know how the other countries are coming along with this, but it would be something worth noting, keeping an eye on. Peacemaking for the queer culture is ensuring supportive structures are in place that provide spaces for social and personal healing and encourages queerness as an intricate dimension of the human identity, which I've spoke about earlier. And building community partnerships and networking in order to learn from the mistakes made by fellow groups are needed, and to continue to build unity and cohesion between groups. Through including queerness in all areas of community, education, health, social welfare, plus including groups within queer policy and programming, removes the heterohormonal normativity, which I'll explain in a minute, and the perception of otherism in the areas of sexual positionality and gender identity. I include homonormativity because in my research it came across that despite these inclusive larger events that are taking place, the smaller communities and groups, they're still having, for example, lesbian-only spaces where trans women and bisexual women are not included and such. And these type of closed spaces, I don't see them as productive. I don't see them as healthy in a sense, because it is basically mirroring what's going on in the heteronormative sense. One thing that I have found is capitalism plays into this. Money talks, in a sense, because money can produce a stronger identity in some sense, could open up a gay bar, for example, or start a new club or whatever, you know. But also, coming from the source, it could also not work well. I found that if I'm looking for sponsorship, I need to follow the rules of the sponsor, and regardless of what I feel is right. I also feel that I remember when I was in England, I had some queer youth come up to me, and they're saying to me, "I don't feel like going to our pride because it's all corporate. It's no grassroots to it. There's nothing." And this is something that we may need to look at, to continue to examine.
Which begs the question, because you mentioned the word corporate. Mm-hmm. The whole issue about now corporate capitalism, since people are raising this issue, I would assume that's why that was mentioned.
It's all right.
I have to keep this right. Okay. That sounds very strange. But anyway, this whole idea that you've got this, all this talk about globalization, mm-hmm. in the economic sense, mm-hmm. I'm talking about, from above. And then you have fragmentation from below, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. which is a classic divide and rule. And, you know, I mean, I'm quoting Nawal al-Sardawi on this, but I think she's right in that respect, that whilst the economy is always promoting this kind of global discourse, because capitalism was always global, and then the grassroots were the challenge to the social injustices brought about by global capitalism in all spheres of activity, including including different forms of identity, there's a contradiction, because there's a certain fragmentation, which links to Paul's issue about the fragmentation of identity, the whole idea. And I think we're at a phase right now where identities have to keep emerging and creating their space. But that supports capitalism. But it's probably something we have to do in the short term. Mm-hmm. But how to make coalitions, which is not easy, because class comes into it. For example, you've done a lot of your gay politics, I would assume, in Alberta, mm-hmm. or 2 years of your mm-hmm. gay politics in Alberta. Mm-hmm. Now, Alberta strikes me as being has the reputation of being a redneck, politically very redneck. It's very conservative. And you get your funding from Alberta Health, which is what, is the state's?
Yeah.
Okay. So there you go. I mean, uh-huh. and yeah. how do, for example, I don't know, even amongst the gay movement themselves, uh-huh. or let's say even amongst gay men or gay women themselves, uh-huh. how do they link with, for example, Ontario gays within the uh-huh. same country, uh-huh. where maybe the political tendencies are very different?
No. Well, absolutely. And that's where I kind of come back to where, who are you first? Are you Albertan first? Or are you queer first? And yeah, exactly. Because I have seen it go both ways. Yep. Go ahead, you guys say something.
I mean, one of the issues which was raised decades ago by the feminist movement against the Marxist movement, if you like, was precisely the idea of a hierarchy of oppression, that you cannot say, are you a woman first or are you a working class first, mm-hmm. and that there isn't a hierarchy, mm-hmm. that there are various oppressions, mm-hmm. and all mm-hmm. of them are there, valid. Are real, mm-hmm. are valid, and there shouldn't be, are you this first or are you that second, because you are this mm-hmm. and that and something else and something else, mm-hmm. and, you know, there's yeah. all that. Mm. The other point in relation to coalitions, clarify this, you know, like correct me or whatever, but part of the whole point of queer theory as such is it's not about coalitions, because it's about saying we are all different and don't classify us in a way. So queer, that's why a queer identity is almost a non-identity, that it's saying, you know, like, mm-hmm. there is no such thing as a commonality which keeps us all together, because mm-hmm. there are so many differences amongst us that we are all different. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's true.
So it's not about coalitions yeah. between different groups, it's about, you know what I mean?
It's not really, it's also a challenge to, like, not everyone is heterosexual. Then that's the major thing, is challenging that heteronormativity yeah. and such, and those different elements.
Yes. But everyone is heterosexual. That was there before. That's the duality, heterosexual, homosexual.
Yeah.
But the difference with queer theory is yeah. saying, hey, it's not that simple.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have heterosexual, it's heterosexual, transgender, blah, 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 blah. And within the, you know, non-heterosexual, so to speak, there is this, you know, mm-hmm. all these different identities.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know.
Well, but I agree with what you're saying and such, and I really try to promote more of that plural identity and such. You know, you're not someone first, you're not another person. But I feel that hasn't quite reached people in a sense. I think people are still tied to something or another in some of my experiences and such. That whole queerness, queer, the whole idea of queer is still a class determiner, for example. If you've gone to university, you can maybe know what queer is. Maybe some of the youth now know about queer, but if you're out working in a factory and you're gay, you won't really identify as queer. In fact, you probably, if you heard about it, you would refuse it. You know, you say, no, I'm gay, you know. You have every right to and such like that. But it's, you know, the whole notion of queer is still under debate, right? You know,
I think to a certain extent, the
conscious decision to use the word queer rather than the word gay involves an element of irony or pastiche. In a sense, you're criticizing this idea that we should hug to just one identity. It seems to me, listening to you, that the move from gay to queer is also a move to encourage plural identity as opposed to fragmentation within a capitalist culture to single identities.
Well, capitalism has its way of dealing with difference. I mean, if you look at it historically,
under Fordism, capitalism sort of imposed one kind of sexuality, one kind of sexual relations. Fordism was built on that. But now, with this emerging of difference, capitalism is also responding to that in a very accommodating way, I would say. Because they look at, unfortunately, I say, CEOs, etc., they see this as markets.
Right.
You've got to appeal to queer tastes. You've got to appeal, it's a market.
Yeah, I just think that there is still a whole debate raging, and it's not a matter of saying moving from gay to queer or queer market. You know, there's the pink pound, okay, and there's the pink market and so on. But that isn't necessarily queer. It could be gay. And, it is a whole debate, and there's people who absolutely, like there's radical feminists and there's, there's people who actually say, like this whole queer theory is a whole load of balderdash and chuck it out, because basically it's just telling us we are not. You know, it's not telling us we are, it's telling us we are not. You know, and I am not, I am. And then there is, the other side saying, but, we're all so different and how can we be just one thing we're not? And, it's still, what's the word? Out to, hasn't come home to roost.
It's true. I'd like to move on to another part that I came across, which links to some of the things that we're talking about, and that's peace building. And that's where you're going out into the community and such and informing and transforming lives about queer citizens and such. I felt that organizations, despite having maybe an inclusive policy, thou shall not discriminate against gay and lesbian people, doesn't necessarily mean it's put into practice, and it also means people still need some time to, if you're 30 years and you've been Muslim and you've always believed that homosexuality is a wrong thing to do, and then all of a sudden now you have to accept it, I think that there's going to be some time there for people to understand and such as to where queerness comes from, what it is and such. However, when it comes to human rights violations, when it comes to treating other people differently or disrespectfully, which then links to other types of problems, that's where it gets unacceptable. And that's where it becomes social cleansing and such as well. Even if your intention is trying to understand, if some person doesn't quite feel that you're accepting them and you're a doctor, for example, then that's where the attitude needs to change. Human rights education and curricula must address queer issues from Western and non-Western perspectives, so students learn of heterosexism, homophobia in the schooling years in solidarity with racism, ableism, sexism, and classism. Dialogue needs to take place between community and policymakers to ensure awareness of the critical issues facing queer communities and subsequently accuracy in the law or policy follow-up and revisioning. There must be inclusion in ethics declarations that reflect queer being, becoming, and belonging, and such. And I was just in Toronto about 3 weeks ago, and as you might have heard, Canada now has a same-sex marriage law, so it's my first time that I've been back since this law has passed, and I have... This is in British Columbia, Ontario, Quebec, Nova Scotia. It's going to be in the Parliament this fall about the federal, because too many provinces are changing now. They think that it's just easier just to change the entire law, the federal law. 10, and they're the with exception to Alberta, which will never change, that there will always be...
Ontario,
BC, Quebec, and Nova Scotia, which are all the big ones, with exception to Alberta. So the rest are the little ones, which we'll probably give them a good kick in the pants to get going. So, yeah.
How would you make sure that service delivery is not homophobic?
You would know if you would. I think as a queer person, if you would, because you're so sensitive to being treated differently. If you know that you were being treated differently because you came out to your doctor and somebody else found out about it, for example, and then you go to your a peer counselor or something, that's how we would hear that a practice isn't. No, exactly. But I mean, I think that there needs to be some sort of safeguards to make sure that you're getting your quality service that you deserve.
Because with race, they are written, it's implemented.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But my point is that since I've returned to Toronto, the whole atmosphere has become so queer. It's really been amazing, and I think it's because of this law. It's like the final law, and so queer people, especially in Ontario, because that's where I'm from, they feel a bit more, wow, we can do anything now because we have the hate crimes law, we have all the adoption law, everything is in place, so
we can be.
And that's what's been amazing. So it was my first time I experienced how policy can really affect. So this is why I say it's very important in the sense of peace building. I just want to conclude because of time. Peace reflecting is kind of a new thing that I'm playing with. Because I think that we're living in a society where that we have to work 9 to 5 plus some hours, we don't have time to reflect on what we're doing. There's not real time, and I think that there's got to be some change in our system in the sense of incorporating reflection within our working time. And so peace reflecting within the peace education frame as I see it includes taking those time to follow up with what you've done, what could have been done differently, what worked, because we're always in a continual change. Social change is an ongoing process, and so it's good to go back, visit, follow up with people, maintain contacts with other organizations and people to make sure that everyone is receiving the best care and services that they deserve. Raise awareness on other minority groups within the Maltese culture, and the only way of achieving a fair and just society is through working together and not separately and such. However, I do acknowledge as well that sometimes working separately to build your identity so you can understand is important as well. Think global, act local. You know, I think everything is connected and such, and even smaller events have larger impact. And my final, which kind of links back to how to engage queer citizens in social research. One thing that I found in Kosovo, and I've said this in Japan as well, it took me about 8 months to win the trust of the queer community. Of the gay male community, of the lesbian community, it took me about 2 years. I've only recently just established trust and liaising with them. It will take time, lots of time, lots of relationship building in order to include queer work within your research. I see the role of the international may act as a successful bridge between local population groups until they feel more comfortable relating to each other. Allow the queer person to present what she or he knows, feels, and thinks, but remain critical. One person's belief cannot represent an entire culture or way of life and such. Media is often not friendly to queer people, and ensure that media involvement in the research is carefully constructed not to perpetuate the harm. There was an article about 6 months ago in a Kosovar newspaper from a professional who said that homosexuality is a disease, despite what the Americans and, you know, despite all the work that's gone on, it's still a disease, and they should not be homosexuals in Kosovo, and they should be exported.
Exported?
Yeah.
Like
they're
supposed to criminals from Australia. That's interesting.
I'm sorry? Their own people, so Albanians. To Albanians. It came from an Albanian psychologist. And because in that culture, if you're a psychologist, you're seen as, you're the expert. You are an expert. You cannot be wrong. So you're perpetuating. Remain open to different ideas, thoughts, and beliefs. Challenge your learning. Publish, present, and revisit your research. Culture changes, so can your research then. Become an ally to queers. Become involved in their movement, work, and actions. Most of all, enjoy.
All the minority groups who are involved in identity,
whatever, mm-hmm. they always say that multiculturalism or intercultural activities do not work on their own.
Don't work on their own.
No, you mm-hmm. need to introduce anti-discrimination acts. Now, in Malta, we try to introduce something. Somebody agreed to introduce anti-discrimination, include homophobia, mm-hmm. but it never transpired.
Uh-huh, I see. Oh. It's just may not be time now.
I had a meeting actually, with some politicians.
Actually, now there is just to update. There has been following us a legal notice issue.
Uh-huh. So but legal notice is not a legal notice in relation to a specific.
Yes, in relation to the workplace discrimination.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Which was the issue that they were working on because it had specifically not.
But the thing is saying that if we're going to have a tribunal or a commission for the disabled, the commission for gender. We're going to have
now.
We need a commission
for gay and lesbian.
Oh, so there will be a commission now.
No,
there
won't be. No.
I thought you said.
If you want to say something, could you just raise your hand? It's always difficult to coordinate a radio discussion when, in fact, it's an intimate group. But just raise your finger, and we'll pass the microphone around. Carmelo
Vassallo. No, because. Towards the latter end, in fact, at the very end of your presentation, which was very interesting, incidentally, you made reference to this question of exporting queers, gays, and whatever. But at the very beginning, you did make reference to this question of Islam uh-huh. and homosexuality. Mm-hmm. Peter made reference to the matter of globalization, capitalism, la-di-da. Albania clearly has suffered from a situation of double jeopardy. Mm-hmm. It's Muslim and it's also being communist, mm-hmm. which has not had a particularly good record on homosexuality as even Cuba, a Latin communist country, yeah. Clearly shows. Perhaps you could explore that a little bit. You know, despite all this globalization, la-di-da, at least capitalism, in one way or another, globalization has created a special market and whatever, which at least allows them to live. Mm-hmm. Could you tell us what being homosexual, queer, gay, or whatever in Albania is really like?
Okay. Just to clarify, I'm not in Albania, it's in Kosovo.
I mean,
okay, Albania, but I understand that. Because it's kind of strange, because of all this continual flux of, because Kosovo is completely being changed over, right? It's actually created a window to talk about sexuality and such. So, yes, it is difficult. Yes, there are gay bashings. There are violent acts against queers. And yes, they don't have the safe spaces. Their safe spaces are in international homes. That's where it is. Speaking to an international, anything with an international, then you're safe. Okay. As a gay international, I never really felt I was at risk. Because in their eyes, it's okay to be gay if you're international. Okay. But here, in Kosovo, if you're Albanian, especially if you're gay and Serbian, then you're completely, you're not welcomed. However, for somehow, through this whole change process that has gone on to Kosovo, there has emerged this gay and lesbian association, which is, there's only two or three in the Balkans. And usually this window has opened up and they've taken it. So just to begin their work.
visit by the gay lesbian kind of community?
Yeah, they.
Does it tend to be? Well, is there a profile? Does it tend to be? Before you made mention of Catholic, uh-huh. Does it tend to be a Serbian Christian, or is there also a Muslim presence?
There's no Muslim plus. The Kosovars aren't exactly Muslim in a sense of the practicing Muslim. It's religion is not really important in that area. Okay, so, but they don't, while they have Serbian members, they still need to provide services for the Serbian community. They still need to actually work on their own community as well. It's very, very new. It's a year old, but they want to become inclusive. And what's been helpful is that they're including transgendered, which is an often forgotten first step, but they're including it. And they're including lesbians as well. So that's another positive step.
Could we, supplementary, could we open it up a little bit now? I mean, mm-hmm. There is a, I think, quite well-known Canadian Muslim person who has written about this need to reform Islam and so uh-huh, on. Uh-huh. I don't recall the name at the moment, uh-huh. but she's been in the... on the radio and so on, prominent.
Yeah, I think
how do you see the role of homosexual in, for example, Saudi Arabia, for example? Mm-hmm. Is there any chance of any opening up at all?
It really has to be time in that case. I think social change. What I have found is that as in community health, with you have areas where you can actually introduce these debates as such in schools and in classrooms, because what now, I'm not too sure about Saudi Arabia in the sense of where they are with talking about HIV or AIDS, and I hate to equate HIV or AIDS to gay men, but it actually, in a sense that it has opened up the debates about sexuality and such in classrooms. When you have HIV peer educators going in, talking about HIV, who's at risk, and appreciating all diversity and such. So that may be an avenue. Queer community health could be an avenue. I think the role of the international may be needed there, as well as the UN agencies as such. This month, the UNHCR will be going through, they're putting forth a resolution, hopefully it'll be passed, on anti-discrimination against sexual minorities and such. So with that in place, maybe there'll be some more work that could be done in those areas. So there's a few different streams.
Mm-hmm. I think we should look at what chance is there in strongly Catholic Malta?
No, it's not exclusive to Malta. Israel is the same as well.
No,
Israel
has absolutely, absolutely.
Record for as far as lesbians and homosexuals.
And whilst I have, you know, every concern for people in Israel and Saudi Arabia, I am Maltese.
Mm-hmm. And it is appalling.
And I think we should start with, you know, doing something about stuff here and looking at stuff here and making changes here, you know, before we think further afield.
As long as there are teachers, for example, at schools, like the daughter of my best girlfriend, she is 16 years old now, and she's been taught this year that homosexuality is a disease, it's against the church, and she has to write an essay about it. And, you know, at that age, in big classes, where for sure there will be one or two like that, or maybe that can, you know, that way inclined, and she got massive flack off the teacher because she started speaking pro lesbians and pro homosexuals, you know, what is against it, and she got severely told off. Mm-hmm. And if you have teachers still stating openly in class that it is a disease, that it is a malfunction, and that it should be that you can be gay but you can't practice because it's against the church, I don't think you can get very far.
That statement is widespread, and it's even written in some of our master's theses here. But only a few, it probably still is the case today, but a few years back, 9 times out of 10, if you have a dissertation being written on homosexuals, sexuality, etc., 9 times out of 10, the tutor is going to be a person with a medical background.
Oh, really?
This is the medical concept.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
You watch a program on television, a television program, you're always going to have a doctor there, a medical doctor, I mean, and a priest, talking about these things. Mm-hmm. Okay, the priest, you know, there is this whole issue of Catholicism, if it's, you know, like it's an open debate, etc. But that position taken by that teacher goes against the National Minimum Curriculum document.
The sexuality is not mentioned, precisely. In the National Minimum Curriculum document,
it is.
It talks about class, it talks about disability, it talks about gender.
No, that's about sexuality.
I think it talks about race, but it doesn't mention
it. It does,
sexuality.
It does, it does. Sorry, I mean, just a point of information.
Because I have the
no, just a minute, because I, well, sorry, but I mean, that was one of the positive aspects about this document. The document has its contradictions, because it's based on consensus politics. Now, consensus politics, although it sounds great in a Western democracy, etc., but will bring about a lot of contradictions, because everybody must have his or her voice. When I say everybody, constituted bodies. The gay rights movement did not have, at the time it was known as the gay support group, was not involved, because they are not a commission. They are not a constituted body. That was the critique that Carmel Borges and I did of the curriculum as it is. Mm-hmm. But one of the positive aspects was the sexuality bit, because this was based on a draft document, which was written from a very, very group of progressive people. But this was just a draft. It was put up for debate. It was hit. It was debunked on the issue of on what they call comprehensives here, like like you have in North America, where there's no streaming, tracking. Uh-huh. All right, so that's where the reaction took place. Mm-hmm. The sexuality bit, which I think, you know, we have to look at things in relative terms. Uh-huh. For Malta, it was quite progressive what is written. That remained intact, despite the fact that in the draft document, religion was left out completely. They spoke about moral development. No, of course, the church came back with a vengeance and made its presence strongly felt in the final document. Uh-huh. And which contradicts some of the statements provided elsewhere. But it didn't do anything about the sexuality bit, you know. The sexuality remained intact. And it was written, I don't know whether one should divulge this, but somebody who feels strongly about this issue. Mm-hmm. Because there are players who get involved in positions of power, in positions of influence. Now you get one or two people who are qualified in curriculum studies from your neck of the woods, okay? And they, because they are curriculum experts, but they come with these ideas of William Pinar and all these people, you know. William Pinar himself is a gay activist and writes, he's a leading figure in curriculum studies. Of course, these people have an impact. And they often fill in, they provide the kind of progressive discourse that the institutions which have promoted them, like trade unionism, for example, have not done. So that's why I think the sexuality bit is there. So that teacher... you've got to read this. There's a whole list. It's not just one item. It recognizes the different sexualities, different sexual orientations, etc. And that students should be taught about these in the classroom.
I'm glad it's there and I'll look it up. But the problem is that as an institution, the education department does not actually train its teachers in addressing these issues.
No, it's on the document.
So, so in the putting into practice of this ideology, there's really nothing on the ground, and teachers, as a group, tend to be quite conservative. So, you know,
is there any room in the Faculty of Education? To include some sort of, even if it's a guest lecture or something, on queer issues?
Okay. Well, definitely. There is at least one course that a colleague of mine, Dr. Mary Darmanin, and myself teach. It's called Learning Identity and Difference. Uh-huh. It's a fourth year, is the final year of our honors degree course. Mm-hmm. Core course. So I do the BEd is split into primary and secondary. Those are going to specialize for elementary education or high school, in your case. Although high school also it would incorporate our sixth form. Now, one of the areas is sexuality. And it does arouse a lot of interest among students. In fact, students respond mostly to disability because there's quite a concern about disability. It's a big issue, etc. Sexuality is the one that gender and environment.
not so much about class. This is the response. Of course we do. Race and ethnicity. That's actually my. This is my forte, in fact.
And that doesn't, because I find that I also teach an anti-oppressive, anti-oppressive practices, anti-oppressive social work practice, and we cover all these issues as well as others. But I actually find that race and sexuality. Are things that people react to, whereas disabled issues of ableism and disabilism are more accepted, and people don't really rail against them or don't really say yes, but. But race and sexuality are the two, and gender people have got a lot more accustomed to. I'm sorry, Paul, but race and gender are the other thing. I don't know. I don't know if you can, because Paul seems to be wanting the mic.
I just want to throw in Paul Clough. I just want to throw in a slight bombshell here, with which most of the audience will probably disagree. I think the point about the Mediterranean, and I say this having attended some gay and lesbian seminars at the American Anthropological Association, is that it is a culture of discretion. And surprisingly enough, within a culture of discretion, there is an enormous amount of tolerance. My own view is that the sorts of phenomena like gay bashing, which one has to be very careful about if one travels on a tube, on an underground in London, is not the problem you will encounter here. And if I were to speak with very limited experience of my observations of gayness and transgendering in villages, in Mostar, where I have lived over the years, in local communities, what strikes me with regard to sex, and also because Marceline has just brought up the issue of race, is the extent to which when something strange or queer happens, either in the sexual scene or in the racial scene, for example, a mixed marriage or an unwanted marriage or an unwanted colored baby, the family rally around. And I do think one has to make this distinction. I would quite bluntly add that within Holy Mother Church itself, much is tolerated at high levels. No further points made. So what I see being identified in today's stop. What I see being identified. Okay, I realize I'm just gonna stop and throw it back to the audience. What I want to say is that, well, I realize that in the educational field and the social work field, you can identify very specific problem areas of discrimination or worse. I don't think we should underestimate the extent to which, with discretion, much is tolerated within Maltese culture.
I do agree that you don't have gay bashing here, but I've had many friends, or I have many friends, who...
You do have gay.
They're not reported.
Yeah, well,
the thing is,
maybe
they're
not so
reported.
Prominent, but I have many gay friends whose parents and family do not accept their gayness, beat them up, send them out of the house, and are absolutely appalling. So when you say that, yes, you know, when there is a wrong baby or a wrong colored baby or whatever, or a hasty marriage, there are family rallies around. I find here in Malta, quite frankly, the opposite. You know, whereas in the north, normally the family are the first to accept a gay person. I find here in Malta that completely lacking. I've had friends staying with me because the family had thrown them out.
I wonder if, like, having a baby of mixed marriage is a bit more easier to accept because you can't really change that. But if we're looking at homosexuality, it's something that apparently you can change. You see, by suppressing, like, I know you can't, but I wonder if that's the belief.
But I have one question which I, with none of my friends, can answer. And I wonder what your opinion is. Why is there such a hatred or dislike or basically ignorance about homosexuality? I mean, when I read Greek history, homosexuality was rife.
Yeah.
When I read about Caesar, homosexuality was rife. When you read about even the Muslims, before they can marry, they cannot have a woman because it has to be a virgin. They use boys. Why are people so homophobic? Where does it stem from? Is it religion? What is it?
Good question. They're going to. Hooks from. I don't know if you know Bell Hooks. If you read her, she's from the States. Bell Hooks. wonderful woman. She writes about violence occurs as a result of white supremacy, patriarchy, or homophobia. And until that we discover where these things come from, the violence will continue. And the rage that are felt by people who are victims of this will continue. So unfortunately, I don't quite know where it's come from, but those questions are being asked. Yeah.
Robert, I'd like to thank you very, very much for what was an extremely thoughtful and open discussion, which allowed for, throughout the seminar, I thought very interesting points, questions, interventions from the audience. I liked your own framework for presenting your material, and I think we're all grateful to you for what was, in fact, a series of new perspectives. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You have listened to Work in Progress, a series of seminars on understanding cultural diversity.